Hello and welcome to another edition of Turn Out a Punk Footnotes. I am one of your hosts, Damien Abraham, and your other host, as always, is my friend and your friend too, Chris O'Toole. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Dame. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm back from my trip to Los Angeles. Yes. It was very stressful organizing a live podcast without you. I need you in my life. I miss you, Chris.
Well, I'll tell you, there's pretty much nowhere I would have rather been than the West Coast, certainly. But I'll even just say Los Angeles. Why not? As opposed to here in February.
I'm going
to
say it's warmer in Toronto today than it was most of the time I was there.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know where it's like for you today, but like here, I was like walking around.
Yeah, it was nice. Yeah, it's been nice the last couple of days. I just mean in general, like atypically February where we are, for listeners who aren't aware of our geography, in the southern Ontario by the lakes tends to be pretty awful in the winter.
Yeah, pretty cold in L.A.
I'm usually California dreaming this time of year is what I'm trying to say. So that's all.
Yeah. You know, I wish I was in the California dream as opposed to the California reality, which was pretty chilly this time of year. But I had a great time. Thank you to Madison, of course, from the amazing band Fury for bringing me out there. And Suburban Fight was a raging success, Chris. Like, I'm telling you, to see Matt Cross enter to Systems Overload and to see Brody come out to Hatebreed and then to see them battle it out to decide, you know, who really won that battle of the split. And in the end, Matt Cross, and I guess by proxy Integrity, won. And he crowds nice. To Systems Overload. Chris, I will also have you know that there was the majority of the wrestlers on that card that day were straight edge, identified as straight edge.
Nice.
Yep.
Why does that pertain to me specifically?
They're your friends. I hope that if you're in a place with a bunch of people that identify as stoners, you tell me.
So, fair enough, but I just mean it's just funny. Like I appreciate that. I just find it.
Well, I'm just saying how many skateboarders in 2018, if we got a room full of skateboarders, would identify as straight edge? You know,
I have no idea. I don't know anything about skateboarding in 2018.
But. Well, I'm just saying this is more proof of my theory that wrestling is the most punk adjacent physical activity.
Well, this is what your campaign was. This is really what the weekend was about, ultimately.
I did a live podcast, which, as I said, is a little stressful without you, Chris. But I did have a lot of people come on, and I think I laid out a pretty strong case for the punk wrestling connection.
I don't think you have a very strong case because you keep unearthing things that help your cause.
Yes.
We're not hearing from the other side. We haven't heard from the other side since.
People on the other side chirp up. If you're like in some other type of physical activity and there's a lot of punk people involved, get in touch. We want to interview them. Where do they email us, Chris, to give us these hot tips?
Sure. The email here to reach us is turnedoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com.
So, yeah, you can send us those hot tips about tiddlywink players or rollerbladers or what have you that happen to also be singers in hardcore bands or, you know, traveling the world trying to see hardcore bands in different places. Because that's what I'm bringing with wrestling, Chris. That's the kind of commitment I'm bringing with wrestling.
What I'm saying is we haven't, or you haven't more particularly, I don't think you've had a skateboarder on in a minute in terms of like someone that's representative of skateboarding presently. So
if someone gets in touch with like a skateboarder who's going right now and someone's like, yo, that guy is definitely into punk, I would love to have them on. And I've had people that are skateboarding, like, you know, a lot of people get into punk through skateboarding.
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm not saying like that is the very much the case. Even this week's was an example of that.
Yes,
but
yes.
But I just mean like to test the water of what's presently going on in like on the cutting edge of these physical activity cultures, so to speak. I don't know. I can't speak for them. But I'm amused that your wrestling one continues to pay off for you.
It keeps going, Chris. It keeps going. There was a lot of people there that night that identified as wrestling fans and and punk fans.
Not mutually exclusive, yes.
No, not mutually exclusive. No, they're together, bonded forever.
nice.
I had the twin kings of punk wrestling on the live podcast. Robbie Brookside and Lars Fredriksson.
That is such a strange pairing. Like, it isn't actually a strange pairing, but it is just when you say it back to back, it sounds very amusing to me. But if you sat those two in a room, they could probably have a very great conversation.
I was trying to arrange that. There was like Lars was in Florida with his family on a family vacation, and Robbie Brookside was, you know, working down there. And I tried to make it happen. Like, I tried to make that meetup happen, but they were just, you know, too far away from each other in Florida.
That's too bad. I think, like, hopefully that'll, like, what I'm just hoping, if anything, that you can continue to get people who just encounter Robbie Brookside and then they come back with the tales, or he can come back to you with the tales.
Yeah.
So I think it's amusing because that one is still the one.
We got one coming up in a couple weeks on the podcast,
nice.
A tale of meeting Robbie Brookside from someone who isn't even a wrestling fan.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is impressive.
I think the most.
So how did they know who he was? For through here?
No, they were introduced to him through a wrestler that was a fan of the band.
Ah, I see. Okay.
It's a big reveal for wrestling fans that this person is a punk too. Like, I was shocked about this one. This is one that I did not know.
Okay. Well, I anticipate this story.
Yeah, it's coming up in a couple weeks. There's like, I'm, you know what, Chris? I'm not, right now, I think is we're sitting on the strongest stack of guests we've ever sat on for the show.
Well, you've mentioned a few to me, and I'm very interested to hear them. And I do think, I think Tristan is doing a great job, as are you. So, yeah, I'm not surprised to hear these things.
Well, I got to say also it's, Brian and Kim, too, because they were the ones that got these two most recent ones. Like next week, Michael Ian Black.
I know. It's crazy. Whoever deserves, like, your brother was just the first that comes to mind. Yeah, of course. But anybody, of course, that helps, you know, helps this train to move, then so be it. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, next week. It's this week too. Like I'm really excited about this podcast again. Like I went through a period where I was kind of like, oh gosh, you know, I'm panic trying to put together episodes, you know, I didn't get to really enjoy it, but like now that I'm sitting on a bunch, I'm like having fun again. I'm like, ah, I don't feel as panicked trying to like nail down guests and stuff.
Well, I think you were spread a little thin for a minute too.
Spread
so
a little
that
thin.
Probably didn't help.
Yeah. It's great to be underemployed again.
Well, I don't know about that, but
no, it's not good
if
at all.
You say
I need
so,
a job.
Sure.
I need a job. No, this is fine right now. This podcast is a lot. It's chugging along.
Well, my point was simply that if you have the time to actually, in the moment, enjoy it is a good thing. That's what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely, absolutely. And
circumstances
week,
aside.
That. Next week there is pure joy at at a connection that's revealed next week with Michael Ian Black.
Nice, you've revealed it a bit this week on the actual episode. So
I did.
I feel like there's a bit out there, but yeah,
it's out there. It's an Easter egg, but yeah, no, you hear me as I get excited when I hear it for the first time from him next week on the show.
I can imagine.
Let's get on to anything else, Chris. How was your week?
I don't know. Nothing's up. Nothing's up with me. I can't think of anything offhand.
Buy any records lately? Any records lately?
Oh, yeah, probably. I'm just trying to think of things that are in the vein of what we discuss. Yeah, I got a few things actually from. Got one thing. I think when we last spoke. I got a version of Pajama Party, an original version of Pajama Party by Poison Idea, which I'm psyched on, which for listeners who are record collectors, this is speaks to you specifically, let alone Poison Idea record collectors. Of course, Pajama Party, not the most sought after Poison Idea record by any means, but the gatefold on that, like, do you have that? I'm assuming you do, but
no,
do you
no.
have an original?
No.
Okay. The gatefold is so amazing on it. It's got them in like, I believe a top down muscle car, and it's like this huge gatefold photo, and it's them on like I want to say, again, I don't have it in front of me right now, but I feel like it's like in one of these like scenic Oregon, whatever, like picturesque things with them in this muscle car. It's incredible.
I got that the other week.
It's been in, like, it's been used, I think, in a few of their like different things, maybe? I believe. Yeah, it could be, like, but it's color, a great,
I think.
Yeah, the one in the actual original record is in color, but what I love about it is it's like a gatefold, so it's huge.
Yeah,
it's just great. But I got the second Swizz single from a buddy, mutual friend, Big Rick.
Shout out, Big Rick.
He was just getting rid of a bunch of stuff, and like,
What is it? Sold out hardcore flyer. What's his Instagram thing?
Oh, it's gonna kill. Hold on, I'll look it up right now. Like, if I had the internet, I would look it up right now. But let's just see.
Is it
I think it's like. No, I think it's not sold out for sure. It's like Hardcore Flyers or something. Yeah, I think it's called.
It's a good Instagram. I see a lot.
I think it's HC Punk Flyers. There we go.
That's it.
HC Punk Flyers on Instagram.
I send that around.
Anyway,
I send some flyers with like that around. Every time once in a while, I'll see something on there and I'll be like, oh, got to send that to that person.
Yeah, it's like he does post a lot of really good stuff on there, actually. And I always forget that it's I don't know if it's just him, but there's a few people we know, I believe, that are responsible for doing that. And what else? I got the O-Level. I guess it's an official reissue.
Mm-hmm.
The Malcolm EP.
The one that's like that totally was the other week. Put out, I think.
I don't know. I have it in front of me. I don't believe it's Total Punk, but I can't remember.
Okay.
Breakout Records.
Breaker.
I don't know who that is, but it's. I think it's actually an official reissue, but I'm not sure.
I think it is too.
And yeah, that's about it. I'm trying to think of LPs. I feel like there is something, but nothing in the punk vein, I don't believe. No. But yeah.
I picked up some shit in L.A. I got the my friend Caesar gave me a Negative Approach bootleg of Pressure. Thank you so much for that. Whoa. Caesar. I think it's the same.
Nice.
I think it's the same songs that are on that other bootleg from like Germany. Remember that? It's a very similar kind of cover to the one that came out from Germany. That's got kind of like a stripe motif to it.
Well, I'm gonna look it up on the resource right now because it doesn't ring a bell, but I will look it up as we are known to do.
As we are known to do. I wonder if like collecting bootlegs is going to become like the next thing, or if it already is. You know,
I think it's always been a thing if you're in a jam bands. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. But, live sides.
Which one eats this? Okay, so what's the record? Oh, can't tell. Well, no, I don't know which one you're talking about.
It's on. Have you gone to the unofficial tab?
Oh no, let's do that.
You got to go to the unofficial tab.
I will say again, I think I've said this before, but you're really good at the resource because I never even look at these.
Chris, I spent a little bit of time on this resource.
So which one are you talking about here?
Someone's got a Negative Approach test press for sale for $5,000.
Whoa. Ooh. Total Recall, the bootleg of it, you're saying? Or the which one are you talking about?
No, it's called Pressure, the bootleg.
Oh, the bootleg is Pressure. I don't see it on here. There we go. Yeah,
it's on compilations.
Recollect Records.
Yeah, but I think it's the same as Live. No, maybe it's not. Live Your Life for You. Live Your Life for You. Sorry, Live Your Life for You. Live Your Life for You.
So what? This is the one you have, though? You got the Pressure one?
I got Pressure, yeah.
Nice.
My friend Caesar.
Pressure looks. Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah.
It's a good looking record.
It looks like the other one. See, Live Your Life for You, like the bootleg live record.
Yeah. I just want to shout out that Recollect just totally like lifts the SSD X in the whatever in their logo, which is kind of sick. So what was the one you want me to look at now to compare it? Live Your Life for You. Yeah, it does look like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Same photo.
Dude, this one looks even better. Yeah. Right. It does.
Yeah. It's pretty sick looking bootleg. I also have the You Die Now bootleg on Max Hate, which has some cool songs on it. Terrible, terrible sound quality. Not a great cover, too.
The cover is amazing. I've never seen this, weirdly enough, but I'm impressed.
I got it full blast back in the day.
Wow. Yeah, this is one of those things that you would come across in the early, in, at least for me, in like a formative year. And I'd be like, yeah, that record doesn't look too sick. I'm not going to buy that. And then later, I actually, funnily enough, the first thing I ever bought by them, by Negative Approach, that is, was that Touch and Go, what is it called? Total Recall.
Yeah.
And it looks like on CD way back when. I didn't get it in 92, but I probably got it, I don't know, shortly thereafter. And I still hate how it looks. But it's such a weird, like, the back of it looks cool, but that cover is always bothering me. Yeah, it's so poorly done. I don't understand what happened with kind of the CD reissues of this stuff. But
it was like the 90s; they were going for terrible art for stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, like, in theory, it should be cool because if you describe it, it's like it looks like a video still, and it's like trailing off. But it just doesn't, to me, it's not really representative of what that band is or whatever.
It looks like
until you hear it, and you're like, okay, it's sick.
It looks like a rave bootleg.
Well, like, exactly. Like, the point is, if you look at, compared to, like, and again, this was done, whatever, over 10 years later, but if you look at, like, the Ready to Fight, whatever, bootleg, which, not bootleg, whatever, the official, which is essentially that plus other stuff,
mm-hmm.
It looks amazing. It's like, that's what this should have looked like in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I don't know what went wrong there, but anyway, yeah, great band, of course, Negative Approach. We don't even need to pontificate about Negative Approach, really. You actually have a test, don't you, of that?
Of the 7-inch?
Yeah.
Yes, I do, Chris.
Ooh, yes, big, heavy hitter.
It's
I have Fair Warning Volume 1, the DVD,
yes.
Which includes the Misfits footage.
Which got banned, later, right? Pulled off the market.
That
right?
Got banned, yeah. So by no means is that nearly as cool as your test press. But
the test press,
I just
want to
say I'm also cool.
The test press was definitely like one of the most ridiculous acquisitions I've ever made in my life.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know. I think it's great. I think it's great.
Yeah, no regrets. No regrets.
Power move.
It's crazy how like the Fair Warning DVD has never been sold on Discogs.
It's true.
Which is
no, it has
the second one
out of here. Yeah, oh no, not two, but one has
one has, on it. But second one hasn't.
Yeah, I don't have this one. Is it the same? Is there any different?
Yeah,
or
Fair
more
Warning's
shows
totally there? Different shows.
Yeah, because the first one's not bad, and the Misfits footage, even still, like, it's funny to me that that was a whole. Well, I don't know what the background on why that is, like, was such a controversy, but
I think it's a certain member of a certain band that.
Yeah, maybe. I just think, like, even. But to me, it's just like, it's so innocuous. It's like not even long. It's not really focal to the whatever, the DVD. But anyway, yeah. That's pretty sick. I do have an OG of the actual just 7-inch though, which I covet very highly.
Do you have a first press? I only have a second press. I want to get a first press.
I actually have one up to you on that one. Yes, I do have a first press.
I don't have a first press of that. I just have the test press and the second press.
Oh, boohoo. Boohoo.
Well, it's also the test press of the rejected mix.
Yeah, but that's sick though, yeah.
I like the rejected mix. It sounds super hot.
Have you played them like side by side?
No,
I don't know what's the difference?
It sounds like Negative Approach had come from Finland.
Really?
Yeah, it's like
that dramatically different.
It's just like a raging, like, it's just like the mastering makes it sound super raw and super tinny. And that record sounds perfect, right? So it's not better by any stretch of the imagination, but it definitely sounds like weirdly like Scandinavian to me, or maybe even Italian, like in its like how raw it is.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But yeah, definitely.
Weird. Okay.
You know, definitely the most ridiculous purchase of my life. But I remember reading about that when I was a little kid and wanting it so badly. So when the opportunity presented itself, I, like a fool, jumped.
Power move never ends.
I did get some other records when I was out in California.
Yeah, what'd you get?
This weekend. I got, went to Amoeba, which I know there's like so many stores in LA, but like Amoeba was right around the house from around the corner from Madison's place. So I popped in there Just picked up some random singles. Chris, I got some of your favorites. I've got, of course, Flatus.
What is that? Why is that not my favorite? What are you talking about?
No, I know. I'm just making that up. It's some random ass New Jersey band.
Okay.
There's nothing.
I don't know anything about it. I don't feel either way. I don't know Flatus. Go on.
It's just got a terrible cover, so that's why I bought it. It's not.
Okay.
Nothing of note. And then I got the Vandals, where they do a bunch of Ramones covers.
Nice.
Yep. Well, Flatus had a bunch of records. Like Flatus.
I don't know, I guess. Are we resourcing that one?
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at the resource right now. This is their second 7-inch. And then I got the Bouncing Souls Weston split on red vinyl. And the Unwritten Law for 7-inch.
Okay, you didn't have that already?
No. Not on red.
Not on red.
Not on red.
And you said the Unwritten Law first 7-inch.
Yeah, the first 7-inch Unwritten Law photo, Chris.
Which is called Blur.
Yeah. It was, you know, I'm not all, they're not all, you know, winter weekends, not all hits. It can't be all Massacre 68 and Typhus Flexies.
Red Eye Records from 93. Wow, you did it. I have to say, this record looks horrendous, but very of the era. Although the back of the record doesn't look bad, the front is terrible. And the front is the nightmare that I continually have aesthetically about the 90s in my brain is what the cover of this looks like. Not to mention like Blur with two R's. Like, come on. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But, you know, so be it. I love that you went for the pop punk, though.
Well,
and the Weston split.
Yeah, like it was all there and it was all for sale. And I was like, damn, I got to get, you know.
Like when you buy any of this stuff now, do people like kind of not that they would make fun of it, but are they like blown away that you're buying some of this stuff ever?
No, I don't think so. I don't think people, you know, would know me from anyone at the store. Just like think that's kind of weird, probably, that an adult male. Well, I know this is like, who else would be buying this? This is the stuff that came out when I was a kid.
Yeah,
you know. I also did get a couple LPs as well from bands that I saw. You know, it was a rare experience for me to go out and see shows. I got to see Summerland and Eternal Champion play, and it was incredible. Nice. Got to see Mutual Friends, DFJ, and Tarpy from Iron Age, and now Eternal Champion. Picked up that LP, the Eternal Champion LP. Incredible. That was an incredible show.
Nice. I don't know if it was via you or someone else, but I saw little sprinklings of live footage from various things that you were sort of at or near.
I was posting some stuff. I was on the social media, throwing up some flicks, throwing up some vids, Chris. That's what
nice.
That's what you got to do, you know. I also got the Fury Paramount LP, which is actually a great record that I have been getting into lately, and so now I have it on vinyl. And then the new Turnstile record. So I went to that release party. And
nice.
Yeah, so it was like a fun weekend. I felt like, wow, this is what it's like to be involved and going around and doing stuff again, as opposed to now where I'm just dadding all the time, which is awesome, too. No diss on dadding.
Of course. No, but I think it's interesting that you were there for that event, of course, which you were brought for. But I think it was fitting that you got to hit up a bunch of other stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's cool.
Yeah, no, I got to hit up a bunch of things, got to have some fun, but now, Chris, I'm back in your waiting arms.
Nice. what was the highlight of the weekend for you? I guess I should ask that question.
Oh, I'm trying to think what the highlight of the whole weekend was for me. I hung out with a friend of mine, Abdullah Saeed, who hosts Bon Appetit.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. that was probably not a fun time for you, Chris, but it was definitely a fun time for me.
For reasons that we could all assume why it would be very fun for you?
It was just like fun hanging out. But yeah, no, definitely there was some, you know, things that would be fun for me that aren't fun for you that were going on. Smoking weed. That's just it. Nothing else. Fair. Just smoking weed. But also he lives with that dude from the movie Bring It On, Steve, love interest from the movie Bring It On.
The movie Bring It. No way. The punk dude?
Is he a punk dude in that movie?
I'm pretty sure he is, yeah.
I don't think he's a punk dude IRL.
Like, it's not like, no, God, no. It, even in the movie, it's really embarrassing. But, it, like, pretty sure he's, like, wearing Clash shirts and he's, like,
oh yeah.
There's a scene where he's, like, rocking out. That's super funny. I love that you didn't clue into that.
No, I did not clue into that. He hung out, too. Like, he was a nice guy. But
nice.
Yeah, but I did not. I should have hit him on that punk tip.
You definitely should have. Should
Abdullah have is, though.
What, into punk?
Yeah, like he played in a band. He played in a Muslim punk band, or like a band that got kind of like identified and then chose to identify as a Muslim punk band. He goes into it all because I recorded a podcast with him.
Nice.
So that's going to be coming up in the near future.
Anticipating.
Yeah. But I guess that's it. We should dive in because, Chris, we had a time limit tonight and we're already kind of well over the time limit. Chris and I are both exhausted. We're going to break the evergreen notion of this podcast right now for you. It's very late for Chris and I right now when we're recording, so we're going to try and keep this brief, as brief as as my constant verbal diarrhea can allow.
All right, so where do you want to begin? Do you want to get to some of the back of the house communications, or do you want to dive into the episode, or
I think we should use the back of the house communications as the guide to dive into the episode.
Fair enough. Okay,
you know, no point in not. We of course have two amazing regular contributors, the Daves, David Up and Dave Martin. And these two contributors will listen to the podcast and send in conversation points. They also come on the podcast from time to time as well.
Yes, absolutely. Lovely, lovely folks, those Daves.
Yes, very much so. So they have, and they have not failed us this week. They have come through in a big way and brought some cool talking points. So let's dive into the first part of this, I guess.
Sure. I just have the email here. So do you want to take one or you want me to bring one up?
Why don't you go first?
What would you like to? So this one is just more of a funny one because when it was mentioned, this did not come to my brain in the interview when I was listening to it. But David Up brings it up, which was the Soy Not Oi, the cookbook.
Yes.
Is what he believes Shaka is referring to in the interview. Of course, this was like, weirdly enough, I've never owned this or any version of it. I don't really know. Because, no, that was a legit book, right? That one isn't like one of these zine-y style things. That one's like a legit book.
It might have started as a zine type thing, and then by the time you and me were kind of around it a couple years later, it might have been a legit
book. Okay. Yeah, that would make sense. But either way, I believe I've seen, like, in stores or at atypical friends' houses – especially people that lived through the 90s in punk and hardcore, seen the book. But yeah, oddly enough, I've never owned it, or I'm not much of a cook either, to be honest, so it's not really my bag. But had you ever, I'm just curious because that is just a funny thing, like, have you ever owned that?
I didn't know that, but I owned Died for a New America.
Oh, which is propaganda references.
Yeah, that's the other big vegan book. And I think that's the thing, it's like, this was the vegan book, I think, for the generation before. And I remember seeing it too, like Who's Emma,
gotcha. They
have it, and like, you know, like friends would have it. But I think for me, it was like definitely anything propaganda referenced.
Yeah, I think I just thought it painted a funny mental picture when David Up brought up the talking point, because you and I, certainly, you more than I would argue, but just living through, again, the 90s, very pervasive that you would encounter something related to this. And I've been a vegetarian for a long while, so, you know, of course, it's in my wheelhouse. But weirdly enough, I've never owned that or any one of these, like, staple cookbooks. I never had one. We've been staring at my bookshelf right now just to make sure there's nothing that's slipping through the cracks that I can see. And no, it's all music and like other related things. But anyway, I just thought it was a funny talking point.
I think I still probably have a vegan cookbook or two downstairs, but I don't know which ones. But like, you know,
I think they're great. I probably should have one. I just have never had one.
Well, you do have one. It's called The Internet.
Well, now, yes, of course.
Now you don't need it, Chris. You just go on there and look up anything. It's crazy. Lauren's always like, why don't you look at the cookbooks? I'm like, because they're heavy and they're all the way up on that shelf and you can find the same recipe here. I suppose that's the argument people would make against all these records in my room right now.
Yeah, that's the that's the idea. Like, it's funny how you just change worlds and your outlook changes on that. Yeah,
100%.
For me, though, for the people listening, I hope they got as much of a kick out of, or if their mind went straight to that soy nut oi kind of thing, because I don't know, that was just so like loomed so large from like whatever 90, I don't know, for me probably like 95 to like 2000. Mm-hmm. That's what my brain was thinking of all the time, was that kind of thing, or like zini, like just the idea of a zini recipe thing, period. Like I'd seen other ones that had been passed around, like kind of, I don't know, regionally or whatever for you and I.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird. You don't see, I mean, maybe it's also because I'm not as whatever in tune, but I don't see that as much, the recipe thing at the DIY stuff, personally. I haven't noticed it as much lately.
Yeah, because I think
probably because the internet.
Yeah, and the zines have moved, are less about information now, more about art. You know, like, or just like an aesthetic. At one point, a zine was like trying to convey information because that was the only way for the information to kind of get out. But now, it's information get out so many other ways that if it was about straight information, there's like a lot more convenient ways to get that stuff out these days.
Yeah, totally true. It's just it's funny how that is lost in an era, for better or worse. But it just made me chuckle when Dave brought it up in the conversation that of all the books, Soy Nut Oi was the one that came to his mind. But yeah,
mm-hmm. No, it's very
anyway.
It's very I don't know, like it's definitely you know, like one of those, like, you know, the Anarchist Cookbook, that the Manufacturing Consent. Like, there's just certain books that were like on most people's bookshelves in the 90s.
Yeah. I would imagine that.
Cookbook on your computer, Chris.
Oh, I'm not. No.
Okay. That would get you, that'll get you on a watch list for sure.
This will tell you everything that you need to know. AK Press still carries a version of Soy Nut Oi.
There you go.
Volume 2 presently.
It's like, so the Bible, it's going to be kept in press forever.
Yep. Yep, true. And weirdly enough, giant megacorps also carry it. Wow. Which I'm not going to name. But it's funny how that is. It's funny how times change like that.
Yes.
But yeah, anyway.
I think I'm going to go for the next point, which is how sick is the idea of going to a show solo? Have you done this?
I do it all the time. I do it more now than I ever did before. I did find it fascinating, though, excuse me, the idea of getting into something and doing it solo. But I've always rolled, not always, but I would say if I took the whole of, like, you know, whatever, shows, concerts, or whatever that I've gone to, I would say the vast majority I've gone alone. And it's largely because when I was in my formative years, a lot of my friends stopped being interested going to see live music or whatever.
Yeah.
So I would have to, and I drove, so I would just, you know, take it upon myself to go. But yeah, it is, I think for a lot of people that seems strange when you're younger, and certainly like the first shows I ever went to, I didn't go alone. So that I couldn't imagine. I can imagine going to like a New York hardcore show when I was 16 in New York alone. That's probably not something I've done. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I still do. That's how, you know, I have to usually travel to do things. So it ends up usually being inconvenient for others for the most part. So I still roll that way. That's my main thing. But I don't know. Do you find your experience to be different than that?
No, I've been to a lot of shows solo over my years. Like, I remember going to a Ben Lee show solo one time.
Wow.
At the Rivoli. And, you know, it's a small venue. For anyone obviously not from Toronto, the Rivoli is like a tiny venue where if you're in the first three rows, like, you're looking right at the performer. They can see you. And, you know, he stops.
Shout out to Nirvana, the band, the show, by the way. Go on.
Yeah, that takes all takes place at the Rivoli. That's right. So I'm in the third row or something. Bentley's playing. He stops, and I'm like, play the loft. He's like, what? Play the loft. And he looks right dead in the eye. He's like, no. I'm like, oh. And then, like, I'm by myself, right? So I can't turn to anyone. I can't, like, I have no one for moral support. There's a bunch of people looking at me like, you idiot.
Well, I've never done that. That's pretty bold. I've never done the heckle solo. Well, you didn't really heckle.
I want to hear him play that song, The Loft, on his own.
No, it's true, but it came off to him like a heckle. Yeah, I haven't done that one.
If it came off to him like a heckle, man, that guy's got another thing coming.
His response seemed to be that he wasn't impressed, so I don't know why that is. But yeah, I don't know. Solos to a show, to me it's not strange, but I don't know. I guess it is. I think like when you're young, it's a little odd, but I don't know. I do all that stuff by myself lately anyway now, but that's just me, I suppose.
Yeah, I went to a show solo this summer in Japan when I went to see Deathside.
Went to those alone?
Went to Gods with Dave Crist.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Who I just met the night before. But
yeah.
But the Deathside show, I went by myself. And then I met Daisuke Sasaki there. So, but like, you know, he didn't really want to hang out.
Yeah.
He's like, can I buy you a beer? And I'm like, no, it's okay. I don't drink, but here, let me give you my beer. And then I didn't see him to the end of the show when we walked to the subway together. It was definitely a solo experience.
In another country, I think it would be a different scenario too, especially one where predominant language is not something I speak. Mm-hmm. Yeah, going solo, that's pretty courageous too. I don't know if I could. Well, I don't even know if I could pull off making it wherever I need to go.
If it's Deathside, you got to go.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I love that. I love Deathside. I love any of this that you did there, like as far as those whatever legendary groups. Of course, I'd make an effort. But yeah, I don't know. It's funny to think about just the idea of experiencing whatever this, you know, culture, so to speak, like solo. But I don't know. I think a lot more people do that than a lot of people imagine. I think it just so happens that people are fortunate enough to grow up in a place or with friends where they do have a group, you know, in their formative years anyway. Mm-hmm. But when you start to get old enough, trust me, everyone fades away eventually. So if you really care, then you'll still make an effort, and largely you'll do it and wonder why you're obsessed with this thing that you're still obsessed with in old age, or older age, rather.
Jeez, Chris.
But those are my thoughts on it. I'm not trying to be downer on it. No, I just, it's, I like music, so it doesn't matter to me what it is. I'll go experience it. I realize that's my lot in life now. So, you know, it's, for a lot of people, they get to, I think, a point where they just kind of hang it up, but I don't know, I can't for whatever reason. And this is just one of those, one of the facets of that.
Wow, man. Okay, where do we go from there?
I wasn't trying to be a downer. I'm more than happy and content about it, to be honest.
Okay, well, that's good. Taxi driver.
No, I'm not that. I'm not there, no. Not there with that, no.
Where do you want to go? Where do you want to go from there, speaking of which?
Well, I guess I was thinking on the interview, and the thing I found funny while listening to it is now, of course, the group that comes to mind when Chaka is mentioned is, of course, Burn. But the first thing I ever bought by Orange 9mm was Driver Not Included.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a major label record, I think. At least I'm looking it up.
I think it's on A&M, right? Or Epic?
Or it says East West BMG.
Okay.
So it came out in 95.
That, which is also like Cigwell, right? Cigwell was on that too.
Yeah, probably. Sounds about right. I bought this when it came out, and you know, it was all right. It wasn't like crazy into it, but thought it was kind of neat. Didn't really know anything about the band, but that was my first exposure to anything related to him. But again, at the time, that didn't really factor. I just was like, oh, what is this? Yes. And then I eventually bought the that first Rev, whatever, I guess it's a 12-inch technically. Yeah, it's not an LP, right? 12-inch. The one that's just self-titled. And again, this is like informative years of just like trying to get a feel for like what is coming out on Revelation at the time and things of that nature. Yeah. And so, yeah, those are the first two things I encountered. I definitely recall liking some songs off Driver Not Included, but I haven't listened to it in a very long time. And that Rev record, none of it jumps out at me. I still have it, but I don't offhand. I can't tell you anything about this record. I've completely forgotten it. But do you have any, like, did you get into Orange 9mm first? Do you like Orange 9mm?
That was the first band I saw, like one of the first bands I got to see in punk. Like they played that first Warped Tour. That's first summer I got into going to shows. So I got to see them on that, and I was definitely a fan. I had Driver Not Included, and to be honest with you, I was actually looking. I don't know if I've ever gone back and listened to that first self-titled 12-inch.
Dude, I'm going to now because I'm here. Shocked. Literally, I cannot remember. Same. Like it looks kind of cool too, but I can't. Nothing jumps out from memory about it. But I bought it, from a local shop here. It was just kind of psyched that they had it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I didn't really know anything about the band. It was just like, oh, okay, it's on Rev, and I've heard of that, and I've heard of this band. I had that other thing, but yeah, it's funny. In retrospect, I need to listen to it again because I cannot recall a lot of it or any of it really. But anyway, yeah. So it's just funny now. Like when I think of him, I think of Burn or things of that nature. But yeah, my initial, and again, unaware completely because I didn't know anything about the members, was Orange 9mm of all the groups. And I think that's one of these groups that's like, I don't know, like completely lost to time, it seems, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, because everyone's gone back now and Burn is the band.
Yeah. You
know, everyone's like, oh, Burn. And, you know, Burn's amazing. But, yeah, like, I don't know if – I guess they probably will at some point. People will go back and rediscover them because they were popular. They had a good run.
Well, yeah, like, I never realized – I thought they only had the one LP or whatever. But it looks like they have three. Right?
Yeah.
And they ended in 19 – well, not, I don't know if ended, whatever. But released stuff until about 99.
Mm-hmm.
So – I didn't realize they'd be going that long. I remember them, like I said, in the mid-90s, and then I kind of fell off with them. But, yeah, it's kind of wild. Like, I don't even know what compelled me originally to buy this, like, Driver Not Included. It's not that it's, like, I regret it at all, but it's just – it's funny because I don't even know what spoke to me at the time about it. I don't know if I got hip to it from somebody, and I just was like, okay, I'll check this out. But yeah, I bought it, and I don't think I have that, but I have that Rev record.
It had airplay, right? They had a hit, or like an alternative radio.
I don't remember. Weirdly enough, of all the stuff, like again, this nothing is jumping out. But yeah, there's a video here that has for High Speed Charger.
Yeah.
It says,
yeah, I think that was I remember that song getting like it was on like a CMW comp. It was like played on CFMY a little bit type thing.
Yeah, that could have been it. It's funny when I think about it now. And even if, and this is where you might know better than me, because I can be bad with band members who are in one thing or another or not. But there is no one, as far as I can tell, there's no one from Orange 9mm that was also in Quicksand, right?
I don't think so, no.
I don't think so, but I feel like maybe it was via the Quicksand connection that somehow.
Yeah, they would have been like
not member wise, but like whatever, playing the same, whatever.
Same from the same scene.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's how I got hip to it. I don't really remember even maybe reading. I don't know. Maybe someone name dropped them in a Thrasher. It's bizarre to me that I still how little I know about this group, but yet I bought those records and I still don't really vividly remember a great deal about them. But anyway, yeah, I just think it's funny that I knew of this group before I knew of Burn, and yet Burn's the one I obviously always think of now. But and I don't know if there's anybody else like you and I that lived through that, stage of pre-internet, buying your way into finding something and then eventually getting to the maybe where you wanted to be initially. In terms of like something like Burn or whatever. Not that Orange 9mm are horrible or anything, but anyway, yeah.
No, just thought about it. Yeah, you wanted to hear Burn, right? Like that's the thing.
Well, it's like when he says in the interview, because you have a very funny story. Weirdly enough, he tells it about the idea of he mentions Black Flag, and then you pose the question, well, which Black Flag record did you get first? Mm-hmm. And then he lucked out and got damaged, mm-hmm. which, you know, again, I'm fine with all Black Flag to be on. Well, sorry, I shouldn't say that. I'm fine with all original Black Flag. But, you know, obviously if you get something damaged or you hear first 4 years or whatever, then that's, you know, kind of what people tend to think of.
Yeah.
But you know, if you get, because yours was what, Process of Weeding Out?
Process of Weeding Out, yeah, the instrumental EP.
Yeah, so that's a weird starting point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the idea of, you know, sometimes you don't get exactly what you're sort of looking for, but you know you're sort of in the arena. And in this case, I think like that would be my analogy for the Orange 9mm to Burn thing.
Yeah.
Is like, I didn't quite get the damage, but I got, you know, I don't know, you know, one of the other records that, you know, is decent enough, but not quite there. You know what I mean?
I mean, Orange 9mm is definitely better than Process of Weeding Out.
I haven't listened to Process in a lot. Well, I haven't listened to either in a very long time, but I don't know. I remember liking Process just fine. But anyway, just that idea of experiencing groups like this in the 90s and like Orange 9mm being one of those kind of bizarre things that like I bought when it came out, that just all came to mind. And weirdly enough, he didn't like, I mean, obviously you were going to hopefully do another interview with him, because yes, I'm curious for him to tell the story about how that kind of comes together, like what happens there, how that happened. Anyway.
No, I'm very excited to kind of hear about that, because I think like that was during the signing frenzy that kind of happened post Nirvana.
Yeah, totally.
Where everyone's getting signed up to these major labels, and you know, for some artists, most artists, it didn't really seem to kind of click. But they had a good run, you know. Like that's the thing about Orange 9mm. They had some crossover success in a way, and then he also has this kind of like legit, you know, untouchable credibility from being in Burn.
Well, and it's kind of funny because I never thought of the idea of, you know, if you take like groups like them, Quicksand, you even take something like Rage Against the Machine, the idea that you have all of these people involved in these groups that eventually go on to be in like something bigger or something a little different. I never pieced that together in those years because I, you know, was too young and wasn't in the know enough or whatever. But it's funny now when I think about all that and you think of what stood the test of time is the wrong word, but what became popular enough and stayed popular enough and why some of that was. Now, obviously something like Rage Against the Machine became huge,
mm-hmm.
but something like Quicksand has had a really interesting third act in a way, you know what I mean? Because those records, like for people that liked those records when they came out, like myself, I still, you know, once that Manic Impression came out or whatever, I thought, you know, that was kind of the end of it. And yet now they have a new record out, like, whatever, this year, last year,
mm-hmm.
and still play shows. And, okay, a bit of that's the reunion thing. But I guess just putting it up against something like Orange 9mm, I'm always curious as to what people will mine and then will sort of come back for a third act. And it's interesting to me that there seems like there's a bunch of groups in the Orange 9mm, like, sort of category, whatever you want to say, that haven't got it. And I'm curious if it will come to be. That's all.
Yeah, like I think it's time-wise, right? Like we're still in the time where everyone's now freaking out about 90s stuff, like Quicksand and Burn and stuff like that. But I think eventually it'll move on to like later 90s stuff. People start freaking out about Civ and Orange 9mm and all those other bands that happened, you know? The later period,
yeah.
Quicksand records.
Well, it was a weird. What I would say is, if you're not someone that, again, like myself, I was getting into all this stuff, just not really, you know, hearing a name drop in an interview or seeing a band T-shirt. So I'm buying things based on that, whatever. It was a strange era to get into some of the records, like especially the Rev era stuff of that those years, because it wasn't. As cut and dry as like finding Youth of Today or finding Judge or something. It was, for me, it was like I was finding stuff. Like I remember another thing that I got in those years was like Engine Kid. And I remember just it not clicking. because I was just thought, well, this is a little off center. It doesn't really, you know, hit me the same way, I don't know, like a 7 seconds does, or this is like in like whatever, early 90s. But it's funny when you look at like what they were releasing in those years. We've had this debate on the Victory v. Rev, whatever, when we hash that out. But it's just, I don't know. When I think of like journeys of going through music and trying to get into stuff, or like, you know, and again, it's not nothing wrong with any of these groups, just some just hit me, some didn't. But it's bizarre that I can't imagine buying some of the stuff now is what I'm trying to say. Yet there was years where that's what I did, taking gambles all over the map. Now it's at least I have kind of an idea of what I'm sort of interested in. That's what I go by. But
you can these years, I was gambles just, now though, right? Like there's the internet to allow that now.
Yeah, I guess that's a lot of it, I suppose. But I don't know. I don't know what my point was about this stuff. But yeah, just blathering on about Orange 9mm. That's all. Just came to mind in the interview.
Well, it's so funny because like I don't even connect. Like Orange 9mm is definitely one of those bands that I saw early on, but I don't even connect him necessarily to that band now. I think of him as like, oh, the guy from Burn. And then it's like, oh, yeah, he's also in Orange 9mm, this other band that, like, had this, you know, run. And I guess they're, like, very much connected, obviously, through Revelation and obviously through Shaka. But, like, apart from that, like, I just don't necessarily associate them together.
I agree. Same. I always find it funny when there's something I got into at a certain point in time and that I don't – well, because I'm unaware of the membership sometimes – didn't relate it to something that I then heard later that I really liked. That's all. It's just like a funny chicken and egg scenario or whatever.
We're like the nerds that just have to keep on digging.
Yes.
You know, just to make sure we can connect all our childhood memories to our present day existences.
I suppose. Yeah, I suppose that's it. I don't think I've ever heard, speaking of Burn, by the way, I've never heard that Cleanse LP. I'm just looking at the resource here on Equal Vision from 2001. I do not remember that.
I remember being sick, actually, when it came out. But it's, I have to
I just, it's been I don't, a
couple years since I've heard it.
I've never, I don't know. It's funny. That like, there's a few things when you look them up, you're like, yeah, I don't remember that. But I remember that Last Great Sea, whatever, the EP or whatever it is. I remember that when it came out.
Yeah.
But, dude, that LP, I don't know why that one is... That one did not hit my radar.
It's a cool record. It definitely, I remember when it came out and being like, wow, this is a pretty cool record.
Yeah. The 7-inch is still the stuff, though, the first one.
Yeah, the 7-inch is pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
And then there's a new record, a brand new record that's also pretty awesome on Bridge 9 as well. Oh, no, and Deathwish, sorry. The new one's on Deathwish.
Well, there's one from 2016 on Bridge 9, but there's another new one, you're saying?
There's a new LP on Deathwish that was released last year.
Oh, okay. Nice. I know they came through. It's kind of funny that you got them, but I remember, I don't know if you're away, but they came through in the summer. I think it was in the summer because I just had to work, but I remember debating coming out, like trying to go to that, but I didn't get a chance to go. But people seem to be psyched on it.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the best frontmen ever. And I think they're like one of those bands that, like, you know, I've watched so many hours of video on YouTube and things like that, but unfortunately never gotten to see him.
So. Well, I've never seen any of his bands. Like, you saw Orange 9mm. I never even saw that.
I thought you were there the first Warped Tour.
No. I never went. But I remember, like, the lineup is very good, actually. I never went to that one. But,
what was it? Yeah, Quicksand, that... Orange 9mm, L7.
I think Seaweed played too.
Seaweed, and then Trigger Happy. Oh, Sublime maybe also. Trigger Happy was on the second stage, and so was Tilt, Swingin' Utters, Vizzo.
Yeah, see, Swingin' Utters, amazing. So there's a lot of that stuff. Like a few of those bands, I'm really psyched on. I never got to see, but anyway, it's just funny. I'm trying to think of what else to talk about here based on the. The back of the house communication.
Irate.
That's one I don't really know all that well. Dude. It's funny that Dave brings up the. I guess there's another Irate. I certainly don't know this one.
Yeah.
But there's like a. I'm guessing a later whatever. I'm guessing 2000s. I don't know.
Yeah.
Era band called Irate, which is not the one you're referring to.
No, the one he was referring to in the episode. There actually is a video of a former guest and. ultimate culture vulture, Anthony Pappalardo, hit me to this video today, and it's a video of Irate playing in Tompkins Square Park.
Nice.
At the same place that, of course, the world-famous breakdown video is shot. And
yeah.
What is this? It's like a benefit, a squatter's rights benefit, right?
Yeah, the breakdown one or the – I've never seen the other one you're talking about. But the breakdown one, I've just seen the video. I can't remember the context of it, but yeah, it's a great video.
Well, he's – sorry, go on.
No, I'm just looking up – I'm trying to look up the – so the other Irate did not actually release anything? There's not even a bootleg of anything?
No, I just think there's this video.
Weird, because I'm trying to like compare it, because the one I found here – says there was a New York metal hardcore crossover band mid 90s through to mid 2000s.
That's the other Irate.
That's definitely not it, yeah. But this band, wow. This other band, like, no, all self-release stuff. Kind of wild. But yeah, the other Irate I'm not familiar with. I haven't even seen that video. I got to see that.
It's awesome.
But the way Irate was the one he's described, that's the Tommy Carroll singing.
Tommy Carroll. Jerry Williams, Sergio, and EK.
That's insane. Like, that lineup seems insane. I don't understand how – like, they must have no recordings, I guess.
There's this video, how the hell isn't that? And it's sick. Yeah,
but how hasn't anyone like, membership of that alone seems like that should have come out. That makes me think there's not really any recordings or demos or anything.
I don't think there's demos. You know, I think it's just this live video.
Yeah, I got to see that. We should have Tristan post that to
you can find it on the Live Suburbia blog.
Nice.
LiveSuburbia.com, like from way back in 2012, I think he posted this.
Okay.
But it's like the guitar part's really crazy. And the vocals are so sick, dude.
And then, so what, does it have a year on it?
88.
Wow. That's nuts. Yeah, I've never seen this. I got to check that out. But I just think it's crazy whenever you have, you know, sort of like those, well, you know, anything related to any of those groups in general tends to get mined these days. So there mustn't be, I don't know, demos or something. But it just seems strange also that there is no demo. Of all the things that tend to happen, it would be a demo, I would think. But who knows?
Maybe there is one out there that just hasn't surfaced yet, because it is Jerry Williams and he did record stuff. So
totally. And like he said, he thought that, was it Sergio Quicksand or whatever, also might have had stuff. So who knows, man? That's crazy.
Yeah, like, hopefully that does see the light of day, because it is so fucking sick, that live video.
And great band name. Super
amazing
cool.
Amazing band name. Amazing band.
Great vibe.
Yeah, cool vibe. Now, hopefully something does surface, because, I'd love to hear more.
Well, I guess what we should do here is also solicit at this time, although you already had someone hit you to that video, but anybody who has any other things related to that group, or if knows any other things or recording, for sure, send it our way at turnedoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com or to Damien directly, please.
And also... you know, if you have any other cool fun facts you want to kick our way, but anything else, you know, those are the
of course, yes. Yes, for sure.
I guess, like, because we're going to wrap up now, we're going to have a nice, brief, cool episode. But Chris, do you have a final point you want to get to?
Let's see here. There's a bunch of stuff. I don't know. If you have one, go on it, and I'll try to think of it.
Here's a band I don't think we've ever talked about on the show before. I don't think it's ever come up, but Rest in Pieces.
Yeah, that was one. I was thinking of that, and there was the other one was the Collapse thing. But, yeah, Rest in Pieces for sure. I don't – because I always confuse. Rest in Pieces is the pre – am I wrong? Pre-Sick of It All, right?
It's a lead band, I think. It's Armand, who played in, you know, Straight Ahead and also Sick of It All. But, you know, like, their first 7-inch, I think, is 86, or maybe it's 88.
Yeah, because I always get confused who's in it, but I know it was related, but that could be it. It says Craig Sitari's in it, too. Huh. I didn't know that.
I don't know if he's on the first 7-inch, though.
Perhaps not, yeah. The I don't have that 7-inch. Want it. It's incredible looking.
No, it's amazing. Well. That 7-inch is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I do not have it.
85, that came out. Holy shit.
It's nuts. And that, even the My Rage, whatever. Well, I guess My Rage is the OG. I don't have that either. But the there's, I don't know if someone bootlegged that or whatever, but even that I can't find. like the, I've been seeing that circulating the last few years. Yeah, mm-hmm. There we go. Mm-hmm. Pipe Bomb Music. I don't know if they officially reissued it or whatever.
I think it's official reissue.
Or if it's a bootleg, but whatever it is, I can't seem to come across this either. I don't own this either, but this has been one of those things I've been looking for. I'm sure if I looked a little harder, I could get it or whatever online. But I remember specifically around the time this came out, or I guess, well, whatever, a year ago, I remember being in Boston at Armageddon thinking I would be able to find it there, and I could not find it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Rather Cambridge, technically, whatever. I don't know the boundaries.
It's Cambridge.
I think it's technically Cambridge, but you know what I mean when I say that. But yeah, anyway, very cool. That record also looks incredible.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, the aesthetic of this group is next level, honestly. Yeah. But yeah, I don't own any of the originals, sadly, but yeah, cool records.
Also, like, some of the best lyrics, too. Like, Jesus Christ might be the most incredible anti-religion song ever on the first 7-inch.
Again, such a sick record. Do not have it. Really envious.
Very, very sick band. Very
wow, this is a
too.
Lot more. It's a lot more expensive than I remember this.
Yeah, that's I think I'm realizing now with a lot of these records.
Yeah, it's a bummer. But I thought I someone had been trying to sell that, or I saw it somewhere come up. But yeah, it was a little pricey. But I remember thinking in my head, I almost pulled the trigger on it. Like within the last couple of years. But anyway, very cool. Yeah, band's great. Kind of, again, funny that, although Under My Skin, what is this one? I don't know this either. Do you have that one, the second LP?
Yeah, one's super hard. That one's like definitely like, you know, decidedly kind of more produced version of Rest in Pieces, certainly, than that 7-inch. But there's a couple. Yeah. There's a couple heavy cuts on that LP.
Yeah, 90 came out in 1990 on Road Racer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't know this LP. I gotta check that out. Wonder if it sounds. I'm guessing though 90. It's probably got a bit of a different vibe. But nonetheless, cool band. Sadly, don't. So you say you have that 7-inch? Do you have that LP?
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of
those. Yes, you have My Rage as well.
Yeah.
Wow,
it's got a
nice.
My Rage is a little fucked up though, unfortunately. I'd love to get a clean copy of it, but it'll do for now.
Yeah,
especially at $229.
It's crazy what some of these records are now. It makes me wish I had been going a lot harder a decade or more ago.
Yeah, that's the thing about records. Like, you know, just when I thought I was like overdoing it seems like I was doing it okay.
Yep, or in my instance, underdoing it, as it turns out. But yeah,
there's 1500 press and this record goes for that much money.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know, who knows how many survived. Yeah, you know, it's true. Because of the Sick of It All connection, perhaps. Mm-hmm. There's, I don't know, people are collectors that are hard on that, who knows.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I'm curious if Under My Skin, like, what is there? Is the lineup the same, or did they change the lineup at all?
I think there's a lineup Craig Cetari plays in.
Yeah, he is. That's right. Wow, what a photo on the back of that LP.
Oh, the photo's amazing.
The band's photo's incredible. There's definitely a dude wearing, like, a trench coat,
like
for real.
Like a full leather duster. Like a Matrix-style, like, leather duster.
Yep.
And look at Craig Cetari wearing, like, a fucking bucket. Or look at, Armand wearing a bucket hat.
Yeah. Ugh, I miss band photos like this, to be honest.
Dude. Yeah.
Such an innocent era. It's such a good era. But yeah, and then like, anyway, sick. I got to hear this LP. I'm more psyched on that 90s LP. I got to hear that.
It's pretty hard. Not ever... Five Golden Rings is a pretty fucking hard song.
Nice. But yeah. And of course, Blackout reissued the comp My Rage, which I guess pretty much seems to have everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a 7-inch demo. I don't have that either.
The demo, 94. No.
See, I wish I came across that earlier. Like, that's the thing. I wish, like, that should have been something I was able to. Like, I have Raw Unleashed. Like, well, how didn't I find this?
I don't even remember this being reissued. This must have been really hard to get.
Yeah, totally. 94. Mm. Either way, very cool.
Yeah, it looks
fun. But yeah, cool band. Sadly, I'm a 0 for whatever on all their stuff. But yeah, very cool band.
Yeah, and definitely, like, Dave's right. It's a band that's kind of forgotten about, too. In like... You know, it seems, well, not judging by these prices, but in general popularity, it seems like they're kind of like under straight ahead.
When people were the question he ponders here is he wonders if they were more of a regional New York only band, and perhaps that's why, I believe, is like as to why they're not as whatever you want to say.
I would say all that shit's like just regional to New York, right? Like the
abuse, I would think,
the antidote, and like, you know.
It tends to be, if I had to guess, that tends to be the stuff I like the most. I mean, obviously, like early Agnostic Front aside, which of course they're still going, but I like all those weird little seemingly regional things. Those are tend to be my favorites, but this, I don't know if this speaks to that, but. The fact that they had that LP makes me think they must have toured a little bit, though, in 90.
I would think they probably would have toured, yeah. Like, I would think they, you know, maybe.
Because isn't Road Racer pre-Roadrunner? It was a subsidiary or something in those years? Like, what was the.
Yeah, it's like a Roadrunner thing.
Yeah, so, like.
It's Atlantic Records, right? Them,
I don't know, I guess. But for them to get something on there, I would imagine. They would have had to do something like that, I would think.
Yeah. Oh, they look pretty hard. Maybe they had some issues with the law.
Dude, that photo is incredible.
It looks pretty
funny. It's so sick. I got to find this LP.
Yeah, it looks so
It bumps
sick.
Me out that I don't come across these things, like, digging. And probably because they're worth money now or whatever, and people don't find them as easily. But although this LP is not that much, worth that much, actually.
No, I wonder how distribution was for that stuff, though, up here. You used to see that around the stores.
Yeah, I can't say I have, but I'm going to look now for sure. Sick.
Yeah, that's the joy of record collecting. It's never over.
Very true. As we learned tonight, yes. Certainly never over.
You still need to get that Unwritten Law 7-inch.
Oh, yeah, well... I don't know if I need that one, but one record, I don't know why, this just came to mind, but I still don't have this, and it irritates me I still don't have it, which is the DBS Snowball 7-inch, because I believe you have one, do you not?
It's very hard to get. Yes, I did. I did get one.
You did get
one. A long time ago, my brother gave it to me in a trade, but that is something that I have never seen.
Actually, there is something we need to talk about, too. Total sidebar and talking about record collecting now exclusively. You put up recently one of my most sought-after records and one of the like, my favorite things, but you got that Deluxe Folk Implosion 7-inch.
Yes, I finally got it.
Where? Like, you found that digging, or where? How'd you get it?
Found it digging. Found it in the wild.
Like in Toronto?
No, I found it somewhere when I was away. Where was that? Which trip was that this year? Somewhere. Must have been like Philadelphia or something.
Oh, so sick. I'm
trying to remember where I got that now. Damn it. But yeah, no, finally got that. You know, that's also, we've talked about that on the show. That's one of the ones,
oh, yeah,
Chris, we brought up.
Well, and it's because it's like a fairly not, you know, like it's not worth a ton, which is a crime.
Yeah.
Although I'm very happy because I don't own it. So I would hope it will stay not worth much for the time being. But it's so like that, at least the song on the kids soundtrack, it's like incredible. I've heard some of the other stuff from the session, which I believe is, I don't know if that 7-inch has it all. But I have this other, like, other recordings. I don't know if it's, like, some of it's on the 7-inch, some of it isn't. But anyway, yeah, that's one of my big sort of, like, low-key wants. But, yeah, I was very impressed that you found it.
I think they're putting out that whole session, right? Like, someone, I think, wrote in to say that to us?
I don't know. Something like that vaguely rings a bell, but I don't know. I don't have – oh, hold on here. Hold on. There's a self-titled – oh. I think it's out. 2016. Witch's Pickle Records, Deluxe Folk Implosion, 12-inch.
Yeah, that's the whole session that you talked about on that episode.
Yeah, nice. This is another one I got to get. Super cool. Yeah, so there we go. We have the answer. Yeah, it did. Apparently they did. But that that 7-inch is still incredible. It's super, like, the fact that Domino put that out too is kind of wild to me.
Yeah. Domino also put out the first Leatherface, or the first record on Domino's Leatherface.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. Domino has that punk connection.
But it's just wild. You know, I think this, like, the 7-inch looks so weird too. It totally does not look like it sounds. Yeah. Like, at all.
Yeah.
Which is a great little, whatever you want to say, like, throw off, if you will, whatever.
Mm-hmm. You know what, also, now you've made me do a deep dive on the DBS discography, and they do have a copy. Someone's got a copy of Snowball for sale right now, Chris.
Yeah, but how much?
$44. A lot.
Oh, that's fairly reasonable, actually. I saw it up earlier another time, way more.
I think 63. Some
dude had it up for a while, and I swear it was like 80 or 100 bucks, and I was just like, what is going on here?
You know what store has it up right now? Vicious Sloth.
Yeah, yeah. The best.
The great best store.
I've never been in person, but I've ordered things in the past online, and I just am always amazed at what they have. But yeah.
It's such a great store. Like, I definitely, me and a mutual friend, Wade McNeil, did an interview in there one time.
Nice.
And yeah, luckily for me, Wade had to leave and left behind an XLP that I got to grab.
Nice.
I'm very happy.
Crazy.
Very happy to find that one. Oh my god. They've got a Vicious Sloth has got a whole
Well, I knew as soon as you said, oh my god, it's like you can't look, because then it's trouble.
You can't look. You just gotta log off right now, Damien. Log off. Just use all your power. Log off. Stop searching. Yeah. Okay, turn off.
Especially their store, because that's trouble.
Yeah. But this DBS image, they have that for sale, Chris.
They do. Well, I'll contemplate it. But, yeah, I kind of want to find it, though. That's part of it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's going to be – I'm due to find this, because it's just got to arrive. Or at least, if not find it digging, then, like, somehow some, like, you know, pal who was into Canadian stuff from the 90s just has one sitting around. I'm going to eventually say the right thing to the right person, and then it'll come to me somehow. But
I hope that happens for you, Chris, because I don't know how many I've ever seen in the wild. If I ever see one in the wild,
I'll totally for you. Like, I mean, you're probably not the person to ask this question, because you have a lot of I have a lot of records too, but you have a lot of the, you know, like, sort of hitter records that I want still. But do you have, is that, like, that record, like the Snowball we're discussing, and even that Deluxe Folk Implosion, like, I just have records that I'm too stubborn to actually just go for, mm-hmm. like, and just buy,
mm-hmm.
partially because I want to keep the hope alive that I'll find them, and it makes it fun when I'm actually digging. But do you still have any that, like, I mean, obviously, you know, it never ends, so to speak, but...
It never,
like, do you have any that you intentionally don't, like, records that aren't even that expensive, but you're just like, no, I'm just going to find it?
I don't buy any records online.
Not anymore?
No, I only buy in stores.
Wow.
Yeah, I only buy in stores.
See, that's impressive. Like, I haven't bought anything online in a bit, but it's tempting now because it's just such, resources.
It would never stop. Like, that's the problem. Like, that's why I think I had to put that rule in for myself. Only in stores, and only, you know, that's just kind of the way it is. Only I can only do it in stores, because otherwise, as you say, it never ends. It's just like, there's just like, at any given time, I could go online right now and find 1,000 records that I want.
That is true.
There are some stuff, though, that, like, I would, if it did come up online, I would have a hard time not buying it, just because I've never seen it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But you're talking pretty next level stuff, if that's what you're speaking of.
The Trunk 7-inch?
Okay. Maybe not, but okay.
I've never seen it, and I want it so badly.
That's for those of you who don't know, that's, let's just say that references the Unwritten Law 7-inch a little bit or something of that nature.
Yeah, I want the 7-inch. If you have the 7-inch, please get in touch. I would love to get Yank to release Trunk.
Amazing.
Yeah, I think I need that.
Did not think you were going to pull Trunk out of the hat on that one.
That's one. That's the one. Because, like, also that record, that record's, like, realistically not worth a lot of money. But because of that, you're never going to see it online.
That's exactly. This is, what I guess, what I'm trying to get to the heart of. You summed it up perfectly, which is there's a wealth of records that are not worth much. So therefore, you don't see them in these contexts mm-hmm. sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and therefore you don't encounter them. It's weird. It's like they're almost more rare than actual rare records.
Yeah,
because of the way they're priced out of the game or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's like my pocket. I love that zone because, like, especially '90s stuff. Like, I'm all about that. So, I guess that's where my sort of hunting. That's what I'm looking for when I'm hunting and I'm digging. But yeah, I was just curious if there was any you're intentionally leaving off so that you know, like you want to find it. But yeah, if you're only buying in store, then there you go.
Yeah, well done. I can have to hold out. I'm going to have to use my willpower because otherwise I would never stop, Chris.
Yeah, that is true. I can attest to that.
You know, I've seen you, Lost 7-inch was not available online though.
No, not at all.
No, I don't think anyone's got a copy of that one for sale. It's pretty pretty rare. Pretty fucking rare, dude.
Well, either way, glad you bought it. Glad that Amoeba provided that for you.
Amoeba came through. Amoeba came through with the...
How long were you in Amoeba, by the way?
I went back twice because I also didn't bring up that I also bought some flyers there the first time I was there.
And how long was the duration collectively?
Not long. I'd say probably about 45 minutes in total.
Oh, wow. Okay. Not bad.
Yeah, I got a cool flyer for a Discharge, Social Distortion, MDC, Dix, Code of Honor, Decry show.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lineup.
Look at that lineup. You know?
Could you imagine those bands playing together in 2018?
My God. Could you imagine the egos and the weirdos?
It would be interesting. Yeah, it would be interesting.
And to be honest with you, like, there are a couple bands I could take or leave on that flyer. But there's a couple bands that I would love
fair
to
enough.
See. And the Dix.
Yeah, of
the
course.
Dix logo is amazing. I don't know if it might be a regular Dix logo that you've seen before, but it's like the hammer and sickle, and then a penis jizzing out an anarchy symbol, then a C that wraps, it's like the tail of a snake, which wraps around an M16, which makes the K, and then the snake's head is the S.
Yep, they are very creative on the logo on that one, but yeah.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
Put that on the Instagram right now.
There you go. But yeah, I don't know what other points to get to other than our little record collecting bonding we got going on.
Yeah,
right now.
I don't know if there's anything else for us to get to, Chris.
I think we got it. It was only a 40-minute episode, so there wasn't there was a bunch to get to, but hopefully you'll have them on again and we can parse Orange 9mm to death.
Yeah. No, I think we'll definitely have him on again because he was a great guest. Like I loved how you know inspired he was by the questions.
Yes,
it's like what you can hope. That's like all you can hope for when you do an interview.
I think it's funny whenever like people who don't know you really encounter you on that level.
Yeah,
and you kind of you catch them off guard. It's always entertaining for me to hear that as well.
It's definitely there's some wins coming up that I think I catch people off guard on.
Nice.
But that's it for this week, Chris. I think is there anything else you want to get to?
No, I'm good. I don't know. Unless you want to talk about anything, I think we've nailed it.
No, I think that's it for me. How do they get in touch with us?
They can reach us here at turnoutpunksfootnotes@gmail.com. And.
Sorry, Chris.
We've just been talking for whatever, an hour or something about the kind of things we like, so you know what to send. Please do.
And that's it.
Yes.
That's it. If you want to get in touch with me, you can find me at Left for Damien on various forms of social media. Please subscribe and rate, review this podcast. Tell all your friends. Let them know that you hang out with the nerds hang out. And that's it. We will see you next week. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye. Oh, yeah. And next week, Michael Ian Black on the show.